Good day, and welcome to the conference call with Nordstrom, Inc., hosted by KeyBanc. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ed Yruma. Please go ahead.
Hello, and good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us. My name is Edward Yruma, and I am KeyBanc's Internet and e-commerce analyst. First, on behalf of my colleagues at KeyBanc, as well as the Nordstrom team, we hope that you and your families are safe and healthy during these difficult times. We've been fielding many questions from you, our investors, on both the impact of COVID-19 as well as interest in some of our best long-term ideas. In that vein, we are happy to host this call with Erik Nordstrom, CEO, and Anne Bramman, CFO. Just as a quick reminder, if you have a question, please email me directly at eyruma@key.com. Let me hand it off to Erik to make a few opening remarks.
Thanks, Ed, and thanks, everybody, for joining us today. I thought we'd just start off, before we get into questions, just a little context on how we view the times we're in, which are unprecedented for everyone. But that being said, we see the significant changes, both right now, but in particular coming out of this, as really being an acceleration of what's been happening in our industry and with customers for quite some time. These are changes that we've been investing against strongly for several years now. And it's things like the role of stores, the role of digital in the customer's journey. And it really, while we're in a crisis right now, this crisis does provide the opportunity to accelerate some of these efforts, and we can get into that. Secondly, we think not only is it awfully tough times right now, we think it's going to be tough for a while. And you've seen the actions we've taken. We think these times do call for clear, quick, kind of decisive actions, especially for balance sheet and to secure the financing we need to remain healthy and be able to move this business forward, not just for this period where most people are at home and stores are closed, but really looking through the rest of 2020, how do we put the company in best position? And Anne will get into some of that, but we feel very, very good about the actions we've been able to take the last couple of weeks. And just lastly, we are looking at the situation, again, not just getting through a set period of time where everything will go back to what it was before. We are looking to come out of this and be a better company for customers, to compete more strongly, to gain market share. And we see opportunities to do that.
Great. Thanks very much. I guess I'll go ahead and get started with questions. For both Erik and for Anne, can you kind of give us a quick recap of some of the ways that you're protecting Nordstrom in the near term? Anne, I know you did raise some capital. Can you talk about balance sheet and liquidity as well?
Yeah, Erik, how about if I start off and then you can talk about what we're doing from a customer perspective. So as you've seen, Erik talked about in his opening comments, we've been taking a lot of actions pretty decisively over the last few weeks. And I think the beauty of being here in Seattle is we kind of got to see some things early and what might progress and how this might take shape. And so we've been doing a lot of scenario planning for some pretty downside scenarios, quite frankly, to make sure that we had more than ample cash and liquidity, not just for the short term, but the midterm and the long term coming out of this, because we do think this is going to be a slow recovery. And so as we talked about this, the actions we were taking is really to position ourselves best for our employees, our customers, and our shareholders. And we've taken a number of actions. So first of all, just to remind you, we entered the year with a solid financial position and healthy balance sheet. We had over $850 million of cash at starting the year. And then on top of that, we announced that we were suspending our quarterly cash dividend starting in Q2. We suspended our share repurchase program, and we immediately drew down the $800 million on our revolver. We also announced that we had further reductions of more than $500 million in operating expenses, capital expenditures, and working capital. And this includes realigning inventory with sales trends and freezing hiring. And we also furloughed a portion of our corporate employees. We have subsequently furloughed a majority of our store employees. And we've reduced cash compensation for the board and for the executives. And then Pete and Eric Nordstrom also declined their salary for the next 6 months. We've also talked about the fact that we were actively pursuing options to increase our financial flexibility, and we'll continue to look for those options. And yesterday was a big part of that plan, which was our recent debt offering, as you referenced. The investors can look at our 8K filing as of April 8th, but we did announce a debt offering of $600 million. 8.75% senior secured notes due 2025, and that closing is expected April 16th. So as you can see, we take the responsibility very seriously to position ourselves with the short, midterm, and long term to have more than adequate liquidity to weather the storm, because we believe that our responsibility is to serve our customers, our responsibility to our people, and of all of our stakeholders, and we're very confident in the steps we've taken.
Let me pick up on what we're doing in serving customers. I think probably what's most important people understand is the times we're in particular kind of reflect and lend themselves to the flexibility we have in our model. Our model being full price and off price, being stores and online, and a lot of digital capabilities that we've invested in the last couple of years, it allows us to flex, and the times we're in right now are demanding great flexibility. So obviously with stores closed, we're leaning on our e-commerce business. We have price and off-price e-commerce capabilities. The off-price part is unusually large. There's not many online off-price. Let me start at full price. Full price, not only is our e-commerce business running as normal with our fulfillment centers, we've had store fulfillment capability for quite some time, and normally we fill roughly 20% of our Nordstrom.com orders from our stores. Right now, we're filling about 50% of our online orders from our stores, and there's a couple things for us. It allows us to generate some sales. It certainly allows us to start to work through the inventory that is stuck in stores. With stores being closed, we have a lot of inventory in stores. Being able to use that inventory to fill online orders is really helpful to our inventory management. But there's also a benefit to our fulfillment centers and just the safety and health practices that we need to have in place for those facilities. Being able to shift some of that demand of fulfillment to our stores has allowed us to operate our fulfillment centers in a better way. Off-price, I mentioned, we do have our online business there, NordstromRack.com and Holtlook. We have not had store fulfillment capabilities, but the times we're in have allowed us to accelerate that. So actually, on April 16th, we will start doing store fulfillment on NordstromRack.com orders as well. So, again, that'll help greatly, not only our orders there, but part of the synergy with our off-price and full-price business is off-price ability to clear out excess inventory from full price. And clearly, that's going to be the case over these next handful of months. There's going to be excess inventory really in the whole system in the industry for us to have that flexibility to leverage our off-price business to help clear out that inventory will be key for us.
So just as a quick follow-up to that point, Eric, you mentioned that you're still shipping from the full-line stores. I guess as we think going forward, kind of what is the actual restart process to welcome consumers look like? You know, how quickly can it be done? And is that an expensive undertaking or not?
So, I guess I would preface it with I don't think anyone knows. I mean, it's of how the restart will occur. You know, I think government regulations could play a large role in it. Could be national, could be regional. You know, for us, what we have control under, we can open quickly. Part of it is our stores aren't mothballed right now. We do have small teams in there to do this fulfillment. We have our systems working every day, and so they're we haven't mothballed that technology that's in stores to ring up sales. So from that standpoint, we're raring to go. We'd love to open tomorrow. Our best guess is that it would probably be a phased approach. I think by geography, and we're right now working on what are some of those practices that give our employees and customers confidence that stores are safe places to be. And there's been one of the neat things of, not many neat things about the situation we're in, but one of them is, you know, there's a lot of sharing of information across businesses and retailers, and we've been in contact with many, and there's a lot of good ideas and energy around for stores that are open right now, grocery stores and some other general merchandise stores, practices to make your stores safe. So that's what we're working right now. But when we get the go ahead, we'll be ready to go quickly, and it won't be expensive to ramp up.
Great. My next question, and I guess we previously called it the Great Recession, but maybe we'll just call it the recession of, you know, 08 and 09 now. Do you think that that's informative in the current situation as we think about exit from a consumer preference perspective? And do you think that the consumer will trade down and look for value, you know, post-crisis?
I think we're well served to acknowledge the uncertainty going forward, that these are unprecedented times. Coming out of it, not just the timing, but what happens after it, what customers will be looking for out of the categories that we serve. What we're most focused on is the flexibility. How do we get our inventories in a position to where we can very quickly for what customers are asking for, and between online and stores, that balance there, the balance between full price and off price, you know, you mentioned price points. I think it makes sense that this will be important. I think it's safe to assume it's going to be a promotional environment for some time as retailers are looking to clear out of inventory. But the worry, feel good about the flexibility we have inherent in our model and getting ourselves in a position, mainly inventory-wise, to where we don't have a lot of commitments, and because we're confident we'll be able to get inventory quickly as needed, but really get it to what a customer's looking for.
You know, it wasn't that long ago that you had opened a great fanfare, the Manhattan store, you know, and it seems to reflect all of your learnings from, you know, everywhere across the store fleet. I guess what are you now, as you think longer term, what can you adopt from Manhattan to the rest of the fleet? And maybe as a bigger picture question, what do you think the full line fleet looks like in the next 5 years?
Let me start with New York. Like a lifetime ago, but New York's been terrific for us and been a lot of great learning. They're all still the flagship there. It is a different store. I think it is a really good example of what a modern flagship store can be, should be, and is getting. One area stands out is it is by far our most experienced store. The amount of food and beverage in there, the number of pop-in shops, that flexibility and how we're able to bring interest and activity to the store. That's gone really, really well. One part of that is brand launches. We've had a number of brand launches that I don't think we would have had if we didn't have a store there. The most recent example was Skin Shapewear by Kim Kardashian West. We got the launch on that. We got a personal appearance from Kim. It was chaos. And it brings a lot of attention, not only just to that store, but also to our company overall. And that's been terrific. The other part I would call out in New York is around our market strategy, and which maybe we can get into. Our market strategy started in LA, but it really has gotten traction in New York faster than we had planned on. The ability for customers to have a flagship store experience, but then engage with services in either our two rack stores there, where we can do Nordstrom.com returns, or from the Nordstrom store returns, we can do online order pickups, Nordstrom.com order pickups at a store term. We can do alterations as well. And we also have the two local service hubs there. It just makes sense for customers who live on the island there that, here's some services that they like, and if they can be done in their own neighborhood, it just leads to more engagement, which is very beneficial for us. We know when we engage customers across those services that their spend with us goes up quite a bit. I'm sorry, what was the second part of your question, Ed?
Well, just trying to think, you know, taking that forward and talking about really what is full line look like, do you think, over the next couple of years?
Yeah. I think that's a good example of what we're anticipating or seeing is not new directions, but really an acceleration of a direction. We think physical assets are really important for what we sell. We know customers like flipping back and forth between the digital and the physical. They like to try on, they like to touch and feel things. They like to do most of their returns in the store as opposed to putting them in a box and mailing them. They like alterations. They like meeting a stylist. I mean, a lot of these physical touch points we believe are super important, but they don't necessarily take a 160,000 square foot store to do them. We think physical retail and touch points are going to be really important, but they could take different forms. And having this menu of assets that includes stores of different sizes that have good selection merchandise in them, but then to have our local stores that do not have merchandise bought for them, but are there in very convenient ways to engage with customers and services. And also, we're excited about being able to leverage our rack stores for some of these most sought after services. You know, our rack stores are obviously assets we already have. They don't take any investment, and customers have, where we've rolled this out, have understood it very quickly and really without much marketing at all, and are very comfortable going in and having services on their terms. That we all feel good about. And so what that's going to mean specifically in what those physical locations will be, I think we've got to have some flexibility. We don't know coming out of this what's going to happen to malls. I mean, we don't have standalone stores, and there's accelerated store closures around that could certainly affect us, and we'll, as we have been, we always look at our store portfolio and if there's store closures to make, we will do that. But we really look at it by market, what are the assets we want to have, and that mix, I mentioned of locals and rack stores leveraging them. It's a more efficient mix. It's a mix that's resonating with customers, and we think having that mix more balanced between big full-line stores and those local stores and services of rack stores is going to be more and more a part of our future.
Got it. You know, turning to a fellow Seattle company, you know, Amazon continues to put a high bar from shipping speed perspective. Do you think they'll ever really compete with you head-to-head in premium apparel? And then I guess just as a follow-up to that, do you think Nordstrom needs to get faster in shipping?
We'll start with the last one. Yes, we do need to get faster in shipping, and we are. We have, as we've built out supply chain facilities, you know, a few years ago, we opened a big fulfillment center in Pennsylvania, which made our shipping times to the Northeast faster. We're adding a fulfillment center in Southern California that's just coming online this year, which will help our speed on the West Coast. But our market strategy of being able to leverage these local assets, particularly in this case, the inventory that is in our stores, we will, and I've been doing this in Los Angeles and starting to do in some other markets, we can significantly, A, increase the selection that's available to customers quickly, and B, shorten the shipping time. So the amount of customer selection that we can get to customers in 24 hours is better than anything out there for our categories, including Amazon. Now that's leveraging our local assets. So we can't deliver the same selection, the same speeds in areas where we don't have stores. So, you know, for North Dakota, are we going to have that those same capabilities? No, but in our biggest markets, we are underway of that. Yeah, probably just, you know, you mentioned Amazon. It there's a lot of differences. I mean, everyone I think knows their flywheel and how successful that is. But key to that is being the everything store, is having enormous selection and really being a place where you know what you want or what you buy lends itself to product reviews and description and real kind of quantitative metrics. Fashion is a little different. A lot of what we sell is not from customers who have a shopping list of exactly knowing what they want. They know they're something new, and that discovery part is an essential part of our business, and that's something we need to be really good at. We think being in having physical and digital apps helps a lot in that. Having apps helps a lot. Again, it's particularly good when merchandise is more complex. That's not what we participate in. We believe are important in fashion, a significant amount of our inventory is either exclusive or limited distribution, and scarcity has always been a part of fashion. So being the retailer of choice for the best brands in the world in fashion is important to us. It's something we've worked for a number of years. And I think that play out in some of these launches that we've had, being the retailer that a lot of these digitally native brands, that don't start as wholesalers, but, do wholesale us, that's been growing in importance for us and allows us to have some points of difference.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a good. A follow-up to that comment, you know, given that you were early in partnering with some of these brands, I guess kind of what have you learned from them? Like, what are they doing effectively that to the rest of your business? I guess, will the digitally native brand ever be a significant piece of your overall?
Well, they are right now. Yes, they are significant. I think it's an example of, it's a win-win. I think every brand that starts online kind of reaches a ceiling that, and I can't think of an example where having a physical presence isn't part of their strategy at some point. And there's only so many eyeballs they can get on their product on their own website. So to be on our website and to be in our stores has been beneficial, but it's got to be done in a way that is win for their brand. And we're not a price promotional retailer. We're unusual in the amount of our sales that are regular price. We are a place, we have credibility with customers of discovery, of newness. And so brands like, I don't think brands need as many retail partners as they used to, but they need at least one. And we work hard to be that retail partner. It's allowed that business to grow quite a bit. I think one of the things we've learned on that, and I think our team's done a really good job, is being flexible. These are almost by definition smaller companies that are growing. They may not have a lot of systems, supply chain capabilities that some bigger companies have, and we need to be flexible in working with them so we don't kind of overwhelm them or too bureaucratic, too rigid. And it's one of the things that I hear a lot from these brand partners is that they appreciate our team's flexibility and we focus on the customer, what the customer wants. And if they want this product, we figure out a way to get it to the customers and have it to where it's good for the brand too.
Great. You've been known, right, really since Nordstrom's beginnings as having outstanding service. And that's, I know, always been a key part of your value proposition. I know in a store that's pretty easy to reflect it, right? Great salespeople who know your preferences, get to know you as a person. How do you extend and create a great customer service experience online?
Well, I think I'd start with just the lines between online and offline are almost non-existent these days. It's most customers' journeys include a digital portion and a physical portion too. I mean, the majority of our store sales include customers spending some time on online, and a big chunk of our online business includes a store experience somewhere. So look at it really in a binary way like that. I think customers expect services to be fluid that way. So there's a lot of digital tools that help service. I mean, there's kind of the ante of having a good website, the navigation, the functionality, a lot of features that is necessary to have. But there's things, part of our, we hear from customers a lot around service is about, they mention people, but they mention authenticity and kind of a trust there. And what we've learned is I think that is part of our brand, but that doesn't have to mean it's a 2-hour personal stylist appointment in the store. One of the features that I think it's really interesting. It's been a big hit. On our product pages, we have kind of quick, crappy videos of salespeople talking about the product. And it's a real salesperson in a real store talking about why they love that product. And we get a lot of eyeballs on that, a lot of good engagement. And while the customer doesn't know that salesperson is out of personal relationship, they see that it's an authentic person and there's a trust that just helps in this the discovery process to have a real person talking about the attributes of the product helps a lot. So we see opportunities like that to bring us humanity to authenticity to the digital experience. And there's tools that we continue to invest in for our people. An example, we have a tool called Style Boards, which allows a salesperson to basically curate a web page for their customer and email it to them and allows the customer to have it's online shopping, but it's their trusted advisor doing a lot of curation for them and helping them through the process. And that's something that's been successful for us because it's not just about a digital tool. It relies on having great people on it. And, we've got terrific people in our stores.
Maybe as a follow-up to that, I guess, how big, if you could dimensionalize or just give us a range, like how big is the style business for you where you have someone buying through a stylist from a style board or from Trunk Club?
I don't know that. Talking about that right recently. It really depends on how you define that styling service. We view it as we have styling that doesn't involve people at all. With features online that show whole outfits and a customer can swipe through and change different items within that that collection of an outfit. And so it's styling, but it's not with a person involved. And that gets a lot of engagement and real good conversion from that. But then we do have human-based styling as well. And you mentioned Trunk Club, which we think is a key part of our styling offer, especially going forward. I don't have an exact number for you, but it's something that's always been an important part of our business, and we think it's going to grow in importance.
We'd love to shift a little bit to Rack for a second. I know that the off-price channel, kind of broadly speaking, has been slow to move online. I think unlike a lot of your peers, you actually have built a pretty strong online off-price business. I guess as you think about the industry conditions today, do you think that Rack will be the beneficiary of high industry-wide inventory? And are brands really more open to having off-price inventory online?
Yeah, I think our Rack business will be the beneficiary of certainly the rest of this year. There's going to be excess product out there. There's going to be great values to be had there. And our relationships with brands, and part of what helps us in procuring off-price distribution from brands is brands see the synergy, and we work to get this across, but the synergy between our off-price business and our full-price business. The synergy for our business, our Rack stores are our biggest channel of new customer acquisition, and one-third of our newly acquired off-price customers end up becoming full price to customers within the first year. But there's also synergy for brands. It's the brands we carry in our Rack business is predominantly the same brands that we carry in full price. And what we're able to demonstrate to brands is Rack exposes their brands to new customers, and many of those customers end up becoming full price customers as well. So I think we're trying to, again, position our inventory to commitments to be very open because we think there's going to be really great values to be had there. The online part of it, yeah, it is unusual, the size of online off-price business we have. And I don't think there's any secret why. It's hard. It's hard to do off-price business online as you get to lower price points and you get to more onesies and twosies, limited quantities on things that as merchandise is being cleared out. For us, it works because it's part of a bigger ecosystem. Our rack stores are very, very efficient and effective at selling through the odds and ends of things that the kind of the treasure hunts that our customers like. And the online portion of it is great for product discovery. We already have where it's over 80% of the returns from rack.com and Holtwork go to our rack stores. So that's a lot of the traffic that goes into rack stores. Those customers tend to buy things in the stores. It's a more efficient way for us to get returns back. And so that synergy allows us to make the model more profitable. We think there's a shift to digital, an acceleration of digital coming out of this crisis we're in there. And in off-price, there's not really many people who have that business. I think it's going to be important for us. One of the things that we need to do and are doing is continue the integration of those businesses. Our merchandise integration off-price has been a bit behind where we've been in full price. We don't have, I mentioned at the beginning, we're just going to be able to do store fulfillment starting next week in off-price. So we haven't had some of those abilities of online order fulfillment of buy online, pick up in store. We're investing in those capabilities, so it'll make our off-price inventory, as we saw with full price, when we turn on these capabilities, and it makes our inventory much more efficient. It brings greater customer choice to the customer without having to have the extra investment in inventory and possible markdowns. So we're very bullish on our rack business.
Yeah, you've historically had a significant amount that was kind of made for rack. I guess just in the short term, do you think that you'll be using rack to clear out of your full line inventory in maybe a bigger way than you had recently?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the near term. I think it's too. We've got, as a company, we've got inventory and to use our off-price capacity to clear some of that out. But also, closeouts from the industry. We think it's a very safe assumption that there's going to be tremendous amount of closeouts. That's part of our flexibility to shift less from the makeups stuff that's more programmed out and shift to more opportunistic buying, be that from our full price business or be from closeouts.
Got it. We're drawing toward the end of our call, but I did want to ask, one final kind of bigger picture question. You've been through what I would argue is, and maybe the entire retail business has gone through a series of radical extremes over the past 18 months, right? We talked about New York and now you have the current situation. I guess what's morale like within the business, both at headquarters and probably more importantly, in the store fleet, and how do you ensure that when the stores reopen, that your employees are engaged in and ready to extend that great customer service that you're known for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I appreciate that. It's something that we worked pretty a lot about and spent a lot of time on it. Pete and I have been really kind of humbled by our team's response. I think it's come from a few things. Number one, and everyone's in it. I mean, the whole country is in this, and people, watch the news and see the amount of job loss going on, and just the stress that the country is in, and people as individuals are in. So there's a real kind of camaraderie of trying to help help their coworkers and just help their communities. We get communication from our folks is, it's really been heartwarming how they responded. And it's taken people to, they need to embrace change. It's, you know, things, and honestly, there's bigger subjects than selling shoes and clothes. But for our business, things like doing online order fulfillment at a much greater level in stores while stores are closed and people go in there, people have to be able to embrace that change, and they have. Our folks have been excited to, just to help. And I think so much of this crisis is out of all our controls. We're kind of the recipients of that. For people to control what we can control is what we're focused on. And you know, part of, I hope you all, you know, from our company, our culture around service is something that's, you know, was established long before any of us were around. We're the fortunate recipients of. It's just who we are. It's in our DNA of taking care of people. And that's, I don't know, I mean, maybe that's the people we naturally attract. And in a crisis environment, their character comes through. I'll tell you that their customers again, there's a lot of pride in our company. And you know, people want to show customers what we can do.
Great. With that, I think we're against our 45-minute time, but I wanted to thank you, Eric, Ann, and the Nordstrom team, and thank you to our investors for joining. We hope that you all have a great weekend and stay healthy and safe. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you, Ed. Thanks, everybody.
That's today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.